This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
Welcome to the Columbia Tribune's Mizzou Sports Podcast. I'm Nick Kelly here alongside Daniel Jones and Cameron Teague Robinson. And gentlemen, I have not been contacted yet by Tennessee for the job, but have either of you heard back on that football job?
I have.
You have?
Okay. I was turned down.
You were turned down.
Yeah.
Cam,
any luck? They didn't call me.
No, they didn't call you?
Just me, I guess. Yeah. I am a very seasoned football mind, as you guys know. I played a lot of Madden when I was in high school.
I sent them my Madden record, but it must not have been good enough.
Yeah, played a little bit of touch football, tackle football growing up. I have no competitive football playing experience, but I've watched quite a bit of football in my time and kind of experienced it through the virtual realm, so I feel like that makes me a pretty qualified candidate. Tennessee didn't feel the same way, though. So,
yeah, at least you got an interview.
Yeah.
They called.
No, I didn't get an interview.
Oh, you didn't get an interview.
Well, they've called a lot of people, though. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, that is a typical trajectory, right? I mean, Mizzou football beat writer for the Columbia Tribune, becoming a head coach in college football.
In the SEC, yeah. Okay. That happens pretty frequently. I wonder how many people who are listening to this podcast will be listening while the search is still going on.
Probably. I don't expect it to end until the first game next year.
Until September.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they might go through 10 more candidates.
Just imagine
100 more candidates.
Just imagine, like, the athletic department. Like, it's like this big office building in Tennessee, and some guy's just like, oh, did you hire a coach? Did you do that? Oh, we got it. We got to do that. How do we forget about that?
We got a game tomorrow.
Man.
But, in all seriousness, it's a nut situation. And Danny and I's former colleague, Blake Topmeyer, is covering it down in Tennessee now. So, I don't know, Blake, we're praying for you.
Yeah. Probably not a super fun position to be in when you're constantly chasing down every lead that comes across your desk, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a crazy season. I'm glad to not be a part of it myself.
Same.
Yeah. But we are covering men's basketball, though. And that was, right now, the men's basketball team recently came back from Orlando, Cam. What were your thoughts on their performance there?
I put a blog post up. All the days kind of meshed together now. Monday? And do the Conzo Martin, close your eyes when you got chat to talk. I think it was Monday I did it. I think a few things that kind of stood out that I'll just kind of summarize in there. Jontay Porter was incredible all week. I thought if Mizzou won, he deserved to be a tournament MVP. He averaged, I don't know how many points he averaged, but it had to be double digits. But he scored his final game, which is probably his worst, I don't want to say worst offensive game. He only shot 3 shots. But he was 2 of 3, 9 points, 9 rebounds, 5 blocks. He just seemed to be everywhere all tournament long. I think that was big for him. Just really, I think we knew how good he was. I just don't think people knew he was going to be arguably the best player on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he has been so far this season. So he really stepped up. I thought it was nice to see Jordan Barnett get going again. He's a big part of that team. We've talked about that. Danny and I talked about it right after the MPJ news. That Jordan Barnett's going to have to be a big part of this group. I guess the worst thing about it, the thing that I guess should worry fans the most, is just it doesn't seem like they know what they want to do at point guard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you start
a question mark.
Right, you start Blake Harris against Long Beach State. He plays well. You start him the next 2 games. He gets 8 minutes against St. John's and 6 against West Virginia.
Your Facebook Live isn't on the Tribune thing, is it?
Damn, that's what it was. I knew I was going to do that. I know I did something wrong.
Okay. Followers of the podcast, we'll take a brief. We'll pause briefly just to, as Cameron fixes his mistake. So, as most of you that are listening probably know, we also do a live, like, Facebook recording that goes on our Facebook page every time we do a podcast. And today, Cam did not select the Columbia Tribune Facebook account, so it was just broadcasting live from his own Facebook account. I want everybody to know exactly what's happening.
You're right. Just, well, we are going live again.
Well, we are live now on the Columbia Daily Tribune's Facebook page with the Mizzou Sports Podcast. Mm-hmm. Had some technical dilemmas, I guess you could say.
And if you've been listening to the podcast, now you heard that twice.
Yes, and so men's basketball, we'll jump right into that.
Mm-hmm.
They just came back from Orlando, Cam, and we were talking a little bit about that, and Jonte looking good.
Right, right.
The point guards, though, I mean, looks like they're a little indecisive right now.
Yeah, like podcast listeners, I hate to give this to you again. But
no, just yeah, give no, just the minor summarize. Spiel. Yeah.
Point guard situation is still kind of murky. You have Blake Harris got the start against Long Beach State, played well, started against St. John's in West Virginia, didn't play much.
Mm-hmm.
Played 8 minutes against St. John and 6 against West Virginia despite starting. Konzo Martin looks like he loves Jordan Geist, which seems to fit what he wants in defensive scrappy player.
Mm-hmm.
Played Terrence Phillips against West Virginia more than he played Blake Harris. It's just, it doesn't seem they know what they want to do. I think Blake Harris can do things for them. I think Jordan Geist can do a few things for them as well. But I think they do need to find one point guard to like be, okay, this, you're going to be our guy,
mm-hmm.
run the offense, get us down the floor. And that was the biggest thing against West Virginia. It wasn't they were shooting poorly in the second half. They just
right.
couldn't get the ball across half court.
Yeah, exactly. They turned the ball over on what? 8 or 7 of their last 9
seven
possessions?
The last 9.
So, yeah.
And you can't do that. And now, to be fair, West Virginia is the best, probably one of the best teams in the country, if not the best team in the country.
Defensively,
when it comes to that.
Yeah.
They're going to get in you, and they're going to make your guards work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mizzou was also pretty terrible at handling it in those last 8 minutes. Like,
they fell apart. Jordan Geist, good first half, became a disaster.
Right. Okay, I watched some of the second half yesterday, and I was watching, and I go, wow, I forgot it was really this bad. Like, it was just like, it was almost like they were just handing the ball to West Virginia and they were scoring.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something they need to clean up, but it's something that they have a chance to clean up because they don't. I mean, they play Central Florida Thursday, but then they have a lot of mid-majors coming to town before
right.
the Bragg-Rights game.
Yeah, and to your point, I've told you this story. I've said this multiple times, but I think it bears repeating because it's my favorite play of the basketball season so far. It was Jordan Geist inbounding the ball against West Virginia, and the 5-second clock's about to expire, and he winds up like a baseball pitcher and tries to hit
Javon Carter.
Yeah. And
who's arguably the best on-ball defender in the country.
He was not surprised. No. So Jordan Geist like rears back and tries to throw it off Jalen Carter to get the ball back and reset the clock. Jalen Carter catches it and then runs
right,
and
exactly.
scores an uncontested layup.
Exactly.
That was one of my favorite plays of the basketball season so far, for the comedic value.
Yeah, it perfectly summed up those last 8 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just you don't. Jordan Barnett said in the press conference like you can't lose a 16-point lead in 8 minutes ever.
Yeah.
And he said in any circumstance, which is just, it's kind of nuts that they did.
They did.
Yeah.
So following that up, should fans be encouraged or discouraged with how that game against West Virginia went for the Mizzou men's team?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think you're encouraged by... we got your back, Schiffer.
So Alex Schiffer, reporter on the Kansas City Star, writes, "We are here supporting your Facebook Live, so you can support ours when you're done."
We will tune in right after. But I think it's a little bit of both. I think you can take the good with the bad. And you look at it as they built a 16-point lead on one of the 20 best teams in the country.
Mm-hmm.
They were shooting incredibly well. You like to see them get out of their offensive slump they had against Utah, against Emporia State. But at the same time, you can worry about the point guard situation because it's something that needs to be fixed. And I don't really think there's any way to sugarcoat it. They're just not playing well, the point guard right now.
So speaking of point guards, like Jordan Geist is a go-to right now.
Right.
Right?
Looks like it, yeah. I don't know if he's the starter.
Right.
I don't even know if he's a starter in Konzo Martin's mind because mm-hmm. Blake got the start in the tournament. But it's interesting.
Okay, we have another long
question for you, Kim.
Long comment from Alex Schiffer.
All right, if Michael Porter Jr. returns to Mizzou later in the season and Missouri makes a tournament, does Ben Simmons and Markel Fultz curse apply to him or not since he didn't play enough games?
Thoughts.
Curse. Okay.
If he returns later in the season and Missouri makes a tournament.
Does the curse of Ben Simmons and Markel Fultz follow Michael Porter?
No, next year.
So you don't think he'll get hurt in the NBA next year? right? That's a curse, right?
Well, I was just, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. No, I don't think so. I don't think it follows.
Okay.
I mean, he didn't play.
Okay.
Ben Simmons and Markel, they just played and they were just.
But the question is, if he returns to Mizzou later in the season and Missouri makes the tournament.
Yeah, it's not. It's like the NBA league leaders. You have to have a certain amount of games played to be in the league leaders. So you have to have a certain amount of games played to be in the curse. That's how I take it.
Okay.
Speaking of that, there was a Instagram post.
Shepherd Matt said, I meant that neither guy made the tournament in college. Oh.
So he's Michael Porter is therefore breaking the streak of number one draft picks to make the tournament and then also not get hurt, I assume, in the first year in the NBA. Alex, you're derailing our Facebook Live right now.
I'm trying. And, well, also the computer's like far away, so we're trying to figure out. Like, my eyes.
We need like a magnifying
testing
glass.
Our vision, yeah.
Yeah.
Binoculars.
I don't think the curse. I think I get what you're saying. I don't think the curse applies. I think if he's hurt, he comes back. If he helps Mizzou make the tournament.
You're taking the Josh Heupel approach, which is, he says this in every press conference, each play is its own independent play. It doesn't matter what question you ask him. Right. Each play is its own independent play. Each year is its own independent year. That's Cameron's answer.
Yeah, like if he helps Mizzou make the NCAA tournament, then I don't think it applies. Mm. If he comes back and Mizzou already made the NCAA tournament, then I think it applies.
So speaking of him coming back, there was a cryptic Instagram post?
Oh, yeah, the Instagram
The other day? I mean, what do we think of that?
That is weird. I don't know.
What's up with those pink?
Yeah, that's my pink first takeaway. That was immediately my first takeaway.
It took me a while to even see like what he wrote.
My
attention was just fixated on the two.
And then
pink
there was
chairs.
Like a P in the corner, like by the TV, which I'm guessing represented Porter for the Porter family. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the pink chairs were weird. And just the message was really weird because the timeline was given by Mizzou. Like, no, nobody made up that time. The people who told us the timeline was Mizzou.
Yeah.
So, unless they're lying. I thought that was weird. And it was really weirdly timed because it was at like 3:30 on a Sunday, like hours before the team was going to take the court for a championship game. I don't know. I thought it was really weird.
Yeah, it was strange. It was strange.
Well, speaking of them playing without him, I mean, this overall weekend in Orlando, do you think this team is, I mean, it looks like they're going to be okay without him.
Oh, well, on the last podcast, I said they were still an NCAA tournament team. Mm-hmm. I still stand by that. I don't think them being 2-1 in the tournament didn't, like, convince me of it. Like, it didn't make my stance more, like, stronger. Mm-hmm. I thought they'd go 2-1 because I thought they were an NCAA tournament team. Oh, I thought they'd lose by West Virginia by 6. They lost by 4. I didn't think they'd blow a 16-point lead, though, so.
Didn't call that one.
Exactly.
Doesn't count.
Exactly. But I think they're very good. I think they had some things. Like I said, the point guard situation needs to be worked out. But I think you have guys like John Tayport is going to get more confidence. Jeremiah Tillman's going to get a little bit more confident. I think you're going to see Jordan Barnett and Kevin Perry get a little more confident in their roles as well. I do think this is an NCAA tournament team. I think things just have to click a little bit better.
I would be a lot more convinced if they would have beaten West Virginia for the simple fact that that is a resume builder as to beat a team like that on a neutral site.
They will
site.
Need a marquee win.
So it'll have to come in conference because the next best team that they play is probably going to be it might be UCF. UCF might be a better team at the end of the year than Illinois.
Right.
So UCF was a good team last year, and they're still a pretty good team. So I don't think this game coming up on Thursday is going to be a walkover by any means. I know a lot of people are going into this game. A lot of fans are going into this game expecting Mizzou to win. I think it'll be competitive because UCF is a good team.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
here's my thing. If Mizzou goes 11-2 in the non-con, which they'd have to win out, mm-hmm. I think UCF, like you said, I think that's their most difficult game left in non-con. Illinois is not very good this year. But that's a rivalry game, so it could go either way.
Right.
If they go 11-2 in non-con, wherever that sits them in the SEC, now we have to remember the SEC is loaded, like loated this year. Mm-hmm. At least it seems like it so far. So you're thinking they win probably 7 or 8 games in SEC. Now you have to get a few marquee wins in there to mm-hmm. lock yourself in as a at-large NCAA tournament team.
Yeah. I'm going to slightly deviate from the script here.
No, it's all right.
Because I realize now that I have a way to tie it into a more topical thing. So you guys probably saw the Alabama-Minnesota game from the weekend.
Colin Sexton, man.
Yeah, being a boss. Alabama lost their entire bench. They were all ejected because they ran out onto the court in a fight. And so they were down to three people because they had – so they had five. Mm-hmm. And one guy fouled out with, like, 11 minutes to go. And then another guy got hurt. So they were playing with three people for, like, the last 10 minutes
of the game. And they outscored Minnesota.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Insane. That's it's totally insane. But it kind of got me thinking, if you had – now that we have seen this Mizzou team play a couple times, if you had to pick three guys – for Mizzou to go out there and play 3-on-5 for the last 10 minutes of the game, who would be the best three guys out there for Mizzou?
How many minutes did they get?
10, like ten Alabama minutes. Did.
See, that's important, because I was going to say Jeremiah Tillman, but that's way too
foul,
long.
Foul. Yeah,
exactly. That's way too long for him to be on the floor.
Now you're down to two.
Exactly.
2-on-5.
Yeah.
3-on-5, I'd go Cassius, Jordan Burnett, Jontae Porter.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. See, I feel like you need Jordan Geist just because he's scrappy and like...
He would never run out of energy.
No, exactly. But you got to score 3-on-5.
You don't think Jordan Geist can score? Are you thinking about his three-pointer that didn't hit anything?
Yeah, right.
Against West
Virginia? Those are Mizzou's. I think Cassius is their best shooter.
Yeah, no
doubt. And Jordan Barnett's their most dynamic scorer. And Jontae just has a little bit of everything. So those are three I'd go with.
Nick, what are your thoughts? Do you have a three that you'd pick?
I mean, I was probably going to say the same thing, but
it's a good answer. I do like the wrinkle with Jordan Geist because I think you're right. I think he would be a good
kind of a guy who's laboring out, you know.
Yeah. Terrence Phillips would be interesting in that role too, I think.
Fouls,
yeah. There'd be a lot of fouls.
Yeah.
And the one thing you probably don't want to do is turn the ball over.
Yeah, exactly.
So it'd be interesting too if you had like – Jordan Barnett and Jontae and then somebody like Kevin Purrier.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have really any like solid ball handlers, but you'd be able to defend.
Yeah, but
who's gonna rebound.
Right, and who's gonna press you 3-on-5?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess you could just have like if you were the five in that situation, then you have three people by the basket and then one person at half court and you could just harass, you know.
Well, that's where to me it's like even though you conventionally would think of what would work. Like, there's nothing conventional about 3-on-5. So
right,
it's
right.
Like,
and that's what the coach said, Pitino. Because we haven't practiced our 3-on-5.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Well, and he was saying that too. Like he wasn't. I mean, of course, it's kind of coach speak too. But this week after that game, he's talked about how they just were so caught off guard that he thinks that was a contributing factor to them.
Well, right. And if you, I don't know how much of the game you guys watched, but like offensively, I mean, not Mizzou, Alabama was running a 1-2 zone.
Yeah.
It was like nuts.
Well,
and Colin Sexton was. The good old 1-2 zone.
Yeah, right. Sexton was just harassing people at the top, but it was just like the Minnesota players were just stuck in mud. They were like, what do we do now?
Right. Yeah,
and they're passing the ball and just holding it.
And Colin Sexton wasn't even playing defense beyond the free throw line.
No.
And these Minnesota players would just dribble to the elbow and brick.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they would get Alabama would get the rebound and run down the court.
Yep. Yeah, they just had no clue what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
So maybe a new can of worms has been opened. Maybe teams are going to try the three-man offense.
We're going to catch him off guard by going with four.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. So
real quick, shout out to Jim Robertson. Thank you for your comment. We appreciate all that you've done for the Tribune over your many years as the managing editor here.
We definitely miss you, Jim.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
First time I was at the Trib, Jim Robertson gave myself and some other students a tour. So.
Ah, very
nice. First Tribune employee I ever met.
You ever see this room?
I did not see this room, and it was not this nicely decorated.
That's true.
This is a secret room.
Yeah, exactly.
Within the offices of the Tribune.
Right.
Few people probably have ever seen the inside of this room.
I think it's like five.
Probably.
Yeah.
You'll never know where it is either, audience.
Nope.
Sorry. Never. It's our secret.
Especially Tim Todd, you'll never find out.
I was about to ask, is he found out yet? Or
nope.
He's just going to have to wait.
Sorry,
Tim. Just going to have to wait. So... one question we were going to ask. So, Mizzou's going to be playing a big guy on UCF, Taco Fall, 7'6", which just seems just unfathomable, like how tall that would be.
He'd be hitting his head on the ceiling.
Right. Like,
6'5
is considered tall. And, like, a 6'5 person would look short next to this guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, their second tallest person, 6'8". And he starts par four. He's probably looking up and behind him on defense.
Right, like,
Taco,
you got it.
I told you, you need to guard this guy.
So the question was, in a game of one-on-one, could you score on a guy who's 7'6"?
Oh, 100%.
You think you could score?
He can't move. You bring him out to the perimeter.
He doesn't. He could block your shot standing 3 feet away.
No, listen. You bring him out to the perimeter.
Why would he come out to the perimeter though?
It's one-on-one. Who? That's not fun.
Well, I know, but I'm saying if you have to make a shot from the perimeter.
Okay. Yeah, and listen, I can make like 1 out of 20. You've seen my jump shot. Sometimes it's on, sometimes it's not. If it's on, I can make like 3 out of 5. If it's not, it's like 1 out of 20.
Taco fall would be tough, yeah. But I've often thought about this question, like against like really good defenders in the NBA, like Giannis. You would never score on him. Nope. He would. I mean, you would never be able to get farther than 3 feet away from him.
Nope. And if you did, his closing speed is so ridiculous.
Yeah. The ball would never get above 8 feet.
No.
So, I don't, but it is an interesting matchup for Mizzou because Konzo Martin said yesterday that he's never had to match up for somebody that big before.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
You're saying no person has ever foot six people aren't very common?
Right, exactly. So,
it'd be nuts, especially when Mizzou has had the size advantage in pretty much every game other than Utah this year.
Yeah.
So that'd be interesting. It'd be a battle for Jeremiah Tillman.
Yeah.
So you out of foul trouble.
So you're a yes to the question, but you're a no.
Oh, I'd take him up to the perimeter, throw a little, like, few fake crossovers, and just run in circles until I got away from him enough and shoot a layup, score, bucket, easy money.
I'm skeptical. I don't know if it could happen.
You can't. Maybe. You can't. I think you could do your Kevin Durant Euro step.
Taco Fall would swallow that Euro step whole. It's not even that good to begin with. It wouldn't fool him. If you're 7'6", you go from blocking it this way to blocking it this way. It's just blocking with your right hand and blocking with your left hand.
True.
So, I don't know. I think it would be darn near impossible. Although, doing it against Giannis would be different. It would be even more difficult. So, it'll be an interesting matchup for Mizzou this week, though.
Yeah. Just see them go against a 7'6" guy who make...
It's like worth the time to watch it. Just to see a guy who's 7'6" play basketball.
He's going
to
make Jonte look shorter.
Yeah.
Like not that tall. Like, that's just crazy.
Well, and the weird thing about it is he doesn't even lead their team in rebounding.
That is kind of shocking.
Yeah, they're 6'8 power forward. I believe it's A.J. Davis. Mm-hmm. I have it somewhere around here. I had too many pieces of paper here, guys.
Yeah, I think A.J. Davis.
A.J. Davis. Leads him with 11 rebounds. He's averaging a double-double.
Mm.
So that I was looking at that. I thought that was very surprising.
Konzo said yesterday, 0.4? Is that what he said?
What?
About A.J. Davis?
Yeah.
Brings the ball up the floor?
Yeah. Because Konzo recruited him right to Tennessee.
And yeah.
He transferred to UCF after Konzo left.
Yeah.
His dad played in the NBA, Antonio Davis.
Mm-hmm.
So, 0.4. He's the guy who can do a little bit of everything for that team.
Yeah, that's
and
pretty
he, he's had to do a little bit more this year because their star guard, B.J. Taylor, broke his foot early in the year, and he's been out all season. So you haven't really seen him at all. Like you said, you're looking in the post. There's a ton of talent in the post for UCF, but the guard play isn't what Mizzou saw in Orlando.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It'd be a tough matchup for them for sure, but I think it's one where they match up pretty well in different spots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, anything else men's basketball before we move on?
Well, just real quick. You did a story on Jordan Barnett.
Yep, and finally breaking out of his shooting slump. Kevin Perry yesterday called him an X factor offensively, which I agree with. I think he does a lot for that offense when he's playing well. They usually play well.
You blew my mind last night when you said he had 40 points and 20 rebounds in his last two games.
And I went into media day thinking like, okay, everybody's gonna do a story on the like blah blah blah. I'm just gonna talk about Jordan Barnett. And I did a little research, but I didn't like look at his stats like that. Mm-hmm. And I was looking doing like all the math in the tournament, and I added up that he had 40 points and 20 rebounds in two games, and I go, that's a typo. I said, my math's off. And I did it again. I go, that's nuts.
Very quiet.
Yeah.
40 points and 20 rebounds.
I didn't even know he had a double-double against West Virginia.
Yeah.
It was his second career double-double.
Yeah.
And almost had a double-double against St. John's.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, when he's playing well. Mm-hmm. You can tell, but there's nights, like we've talked about in our past podcast, where he kind of just disappears.
Yeah.
He just can't do that this year.
Yep. I have I have a story running Thursday about Jontay Porter. You have a story Thursday running about the women's basketball team.
I do. So there's the
segue into women's basketball.
That is how you pivot. So, yeah.
Report it.
Yeah, I have a, I have a story on Jordan Chavis, who's kind of the sixth man on this women's basketball team, and just what she's bringing in her second year with the team and how she's filling in for some losses, especially from from the perspective of shooting threes. So look for that in tomorrow's Tribune and for some other good coverage as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, women's basketball, though. I mean, they are off to a really strong start. They have won their last five games. They dropped the first game. Most recently capped off by a win over Cal this weekend at Cal's home tournament, too. So that was a big win. Cal was ranked number 21. Mizzou was number 23 at that point, but they've since been deemed the number 19 team in the country, so that win really helped them move up. And so that win over Cal was Mizzou's first true road win over a top 25 opponent in non-conference play since January 5th, 1983. So
where were you guys January 5th, 1983?
Not even a thought in my day. My dad was probably still playing. He's playing college basketball somewhere, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure my parents were in high school then. So I,
yeah. So that predates our time.
Yes, yes.
Can imagine a world in which Missouri was getting road wins over ranked opponents.
The women's in non-conference play.
Now, in non-conference.
Now imagine how they had to get that news out to the masses. Like now, we just text us. I did
tweet.
So when's the last time Mizzou's won a non-conference game?
Can you imagine having to read through the record
exactly.
book?
Exactly.
We do have to do that occasionally. We act like we never do that.
Yeah,
we do. That is a large part of our jobs. Yeah. But yeah, now disseminating that information to the masses,
right? It would be nuts.
You would assume
I
mean,
no use a newspaper.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I did no Twitter.
Now, exactly. Were computers a thing back then? Which my parents are probably gonna be upset that I'm even asking that if they were.
Well, probably not then.
Yeah, probably not then.
I mean, not
in the 90s. I think is when.
Right. Not like on a
wide
personal scale.
So it would have been on a typewriter, right? And would have been in print the next day, kind
That's
of thing.
That's nuts.
Would yeah. That? See, and this is another thing, that, and we're getting off topic now, but like. You imagine being in a press box after a game and having to like call on the phone and like dictate your story to somebody in the office who is typing it up.
Yeah.
That is a world that blows my mind.
Thank goodness for technology.
Yeah, I know, crazy, right? But anyway, we're talking about women's
so
basketball.
Yeah, the women's basketball.
Wait, Apple technology. Okay, sorry, keep going.
I won't comment on that.
See, I figured there'd be a debate some point in this podcast.
I'm not related to sports. Suck me into that stupid debate.
Anyways, the women's basketball team sits now at 5-1 after a close win. I believe it was 55-52 over Cal. And Jordan Chavis, writing the story about her this week, because of her performance in that Cal game, she came off the bench as she always has been doing, and she hit two threes late in the game, clutch threes, and that's been a big thing for her. Where even though she's an underclassman, she's a clutch player. I mean, I believe she's third on the team in 3-point field goal percentage, and she also has just been a spark at times. In the opener, the home opener, she came in when the team wasn't doing very well, and she was hitting threes pretty well. So she's a that to me is what makes this women's basketball team very dangerous. Is it's not you have to watch out for Sophie Cunningham, you have to watch out for Sierra Porter, players like that. But the depth that they have is what could make this team really good and have a deep tournament run.
Yeah, yeah, they are a dangerous team, and I mean that's. I just said because they have so many scorers and so many people that can take over a game between, you know, those and that you have people that can chip in. Amber Smith had a couple of big games too in Cal. And so, yeah, they're a really good team. Do you see them moving up in the polls this week?
Yeah, I mean, they moved up to 19 already
from
23.
Did, yeah.
So,
okay.
Right direction. And they also have some games this week against Kansas State, which should be interesting because it's a revival of a old Big 12 rivalry. Sophie Cunningham said yesterday that when asked about the matchup, she said, well, it has the word Kansas in it, so we're game to play these guys.
Yeah, it's an Eric Beisel mentality.
Exactly. We were talking to her about that actually after, and she was thinking along those same lines. So, so that should be a good matchup because Kansas State is a heavy zone team. Robin Pynchon talked about that yesterday, and yeah, it should be a good test for them, but they're always good at home, so they should put on a pretty good performance tomorrow night. But one player, too, that, again, I did talk about the depth, but one of the starters, Sierra Porter, she's been big lately, too. She's I believe, against Cal, so she was playing a little bit more of the five spot, which is typically more of a Jordan Fredericks kind of thing, but they wanted to try Sierra in that role, and, and Robin came away very impressed. She was talking about yesterday with the way that Sierra played in that role, and even though she's more comfortable at the stretch four, Robin said she is showing that versatility, and that's another thing that makes this team dangerous, is they have that versatility. I mean, you got Sophie Cunningham, who is, you know, almost playing guard at times, but she can also play forward too, and so it's just kind of that versatility that makes this team dangerous.
I think Sierra's similar to Jonte in a sense where people really don't know how good she is. She's had so many, like, knee problems, similar to how, I mean, her sister Bree.
Yeah.
But I think Sierra is an incredibly talented player. I don't think she gets the love that she deserves. I think when you look at her, Sophie and Jordan Fredericks, Amber Smith, that starting five, I mean, just the team's loaded. And when Sierra's playing well, they're going to be a very, very dangerous team.
Yeah, they do have a really talented starting five, yeah. And now with Jordan Chivas making shots, that helps the bench.
Yeah.
And the other thing, though, about Sierra, you mentioned that knee, and she is still dealing with that. She's yesterday in practice, she stole that brace with her. But Robin said she's kind of getting better with it, and I think the quote was right here I'm looking at. She said that her knee slows her down a little bit, but over the course of her career, really, she's been rebounding better and better, and she's been her knee's getting better. And so when you've had as many knee injuries as she's had, it definitely makes it a little more difficult, but at the same time, she's making the most of it and really being a presence under the basket. I mean, that Porter family with rebounds, holy cow.
Yeah, seriously.
they know how to grab a basketball under the rim. So.
Yeah, so true.
But, and then one other thing, too, that Robin talked about that I thought was of note. She's been talking about this for weeks, but she's, you can kind of see she's maybe sending a little bit of a message to Lauren Aldridge, the point guard, who in the home opener had a lot of open looks for herself scoring. And Robin said that Lauren almost likes to get assists more than she likes getting points. But
could be kind of a problem is kind of what her message was, right? Like, we need you to score.
Right, and she's open. And she can shoot, too. It's not like, I mean, they wouldn't be telling her this if she couldn't shoot.
Right.
Obviously, if you can't shoot, they don't. Why aren't you taking all these shots? But especially from the three-point line, we talked about Chavis, but Aldridge is the one who plays the most minutes of anyone on this team, and so they need her scoring, too. And once she does get that going, kind of gets that, not that she's ignoring that message, but once she finally, you know, is clicking from a scoring perspective, this could be a really dangerous offensive team. I mean, it already is, but even better. That's the crazy thing, is they're just starting to tap into their potential. So
yeah,
I agree.
Anything else in women's basketball, guys?
I don't think so. They play Thursday. Who do they play Thursday?
Kansas State. And then,
oh, yeah, you mentioned that. I got that.
Yeah, were you Eric Beisel.
Eric Beisel. Eric Beisel, that's reminded me.
Well, speaking of football, their regular season is done. That Arkansas game, Drew Locke had a great game.
So how do you pronounce it?
Arkansas.
Oh, okay.
Don't say that. Brett Bielema will get really mad at you if you say it the other way.
True, and Brett Bielema is one of our podcast listeners. Although, I don't know how mad he's going to get you on.
Yeah, of all the things that Eric Beisel said last year, don't show up on our field, you know. I hate the color red, all that stuff. It was like the Arkansas that really made everybody upset.
But Brett Bielema is not around, though, to be upset
that
anymore.
Not anymore. He wasn't even really after in the post-game press conference.
Yeah.
He had already been fired by then. Yeah. Everybody walked into the post-game presser. We were in the visitor post-game, but by the time we got there, everybody was like, did you hear about what happened? No, they would get fired. Oh, okay.
They had that press release ready to go. It was like sent out right after.
Right. Sent.
faster than the final score tweets even.
So. Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, what did you think about Arkansas, or not Arkansas's performance, but Mizzou's performance against Arkansas?
Well, I thought it was impressive considering that they were in a hole early in the first quarter, and then again in the second quarter. So they were down by 14 twice. And they came, you know, the offense never let go of the rope. It would have been, I don't know, I guess I just saw that being a game where Arkansas probably had a little bit more to play for, and Mizzou was in a similar spot last year with the roles totally flip-flopped to where Mizzou was a team that was, you know, not bowl eligible and was playing at home at the end of what had pretty much been a lost season. Arkansas had been playing pretty well and was going to go to a bowl game, and Mizzou just stood them up and beat them in the last game of the year. So I kind of saw that maybe I thought it might happen again, and maybe not to where Mizzou would lose, but being a competitive game, it was. And I you know, Mizzou eventually, I mean, they were the better team, and they played like it, which is good because they didn't really have a whole lot that they were playing for after they got to six wins.
Were you more impressed by their performance because they actually had some adversity to go through? Because that's the first game it's the first competitive game they played all year.
Right.
I mean, either they're getting blown out or they're blowing people out.
Right. Well, yeah, it was the first competitive game they won. They played Kentucky, which kind of came down to the wire too. But, yeah, that was, you know, it was kind of a surprise that, you know, that they played so poorly in the first quarter. The defense regressed back to where it was at. But, yeah, it was new for them to have to go through that in a way, you know, and actually win a game. Mm-hmm. And that was not just the first time they'd done it this year, but the first time they'd done it probably since 2014.
Right, right.
Where they won a game that was competitive like that all the way to the end. They didn't really win any games like that last year. I mean, the Vanderbilt and I guess Arkansas was kind of like that last year where they made a number of defensive stops at the end of the game, but the circumstances felt different. Mizzou was probably playing, you know, they're a better team now. They weren't just doing it as an upset. They were the team in control. And so to be the more talented team, to go out there, kind of face a deficit, and then prove that you're still the better team, that hasn't happened for Mizzou football in a while. So that was what was most impressive to me.
Cool. And you talk about the flipped roles. It was almost crazy how flipped they were as far as the records. 1 year later, so Mizzou finished 4-8 at the end of the 2016 mm-hmm. season. Arkansas went to a bowl at 7-5, and now this season, Arkansas finished 4-8, and Mizzou finished 7-5, and is going to a bowl. So, how quickly things can change in sports. So.
Exactly. Yeah, Brett Bielema could tell you all about that. It was kind of funny. There were a lot of articles.
Could probably say something about it too.
Yeah, well, yes, he certainly could.
I was thinking about this the other day. Like, it was nuts how a month, 2 months ago, maybe. People were legitimately saying, well, Barry be fired next week. Like, I remember going to Barry's rant press conference and speaking to, like, a Mizzou fan who I know pretty well. And he told me, he said, Barry will be fired by midnight. And I was just like, what? What are you talking about? No, he won't.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see him turn this around, it's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah, it happened fast. You're right. That was a good point. Barry Odom probably knows all about how quickly things can change.
Yeah.
But in reading what some people in Arkansas had written before the Mizzou game, it's like the Mizzou game last year set off this spiral of awfulness in the Arkansas football program. They lost that game to Mizzou. They came in. They had won, I think, 2 or 3 or maybe 3 or 4. They had just beaten Mississippi State going into that game last year. Then they lost to Mizzou. Then they lost the bowl game. Then they had, some players get in legal trouble. Then they lost their running back at the beginning of the season. Then they lost their starting center. Then they lost their quarterback, like, for a time. I mean, it was just, like, the spiral of horrible things that happened to the program. And, I mean, at the end of the day, like, Brett Bielema gets canned.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was like, a horrible 365-day cycle for Arkansas. And now they're kind of, like, at the bottom of the pit looking up again.
Yeah.
So you can – I don't know if you can blame Missouri for that, if that was them that started the whole thing, but
– they just might have happened to have been the team that started the run.
Barry Odom's cost a lot of coaches their jobs.
Yeah, Missouri was kind of like the Grim Reaper at the end of this year. It's like, that team that you don't want to see on your schedule because they could end your coaching career.
Tennessee's like, we're getting out that seat. We're not playing Missouri anymore. We don't want to do this anymore.
We want to be in the SEC West.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So, Brett Bielema is probably not going to win Coach of the Year for the SEC, but Danny, you will be submitting your ballot soon for Coach of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, your All-SEC team. And you've decided to make that public so people can hear your thoughts.
I won't do the whole team because it's, that'll take a long time. And before I get to, like, the important parts, I was going to ask, okay, if you guys are filling out an all SEC ballot. You know, you're just doing one team, so 11 guys offense and defense. What Mizzou players would you include in the all SEC team for this year? Mizzou football players.
Well, without a doubt, Drew Locke.
Yeah.
I'd probably, if just looking, without comparing them to other numbers.
Right. Just kind of your gut feeling.
Okay. I feel like Ish.
He just had, really?
Yeah, I feel like he had a heck of a year for them.
Okay.
Albert O, definitely.
First team, all SEC.
I mean, if I'm looking at Mizzou people to put on the list, I'd probably consider
him. He'd be in your mind?
Yeah, he'd be in my mind. J-Mo would probably be in my mind. Marcel Frazier.
Yeah. That makes sense. I think Marcel Frazier, actually, he led the league in tackles for loss this year.
That doesn't surprise you.
He had, like, I don't know what it was at the end. He had probably 7 or 8 in the last 3 games.
Yeah, he was nuts this year.
Yeah, it came on at the end. Yeah. So that was one that surprised me a little bit. I don't know. Nick, what are your thoughts? Do you have anybody?
Well, I mean, I've
been said yet.
I kind of cheated because I saw your list already, but yeah,
I send my question.
To be fair, I didn't see his list.
Cam did not see the list.
You didn't see the list, no. But no, I definitely agree with Drew Locke. Albert O, just statistics alone.
Mm-hmm.
Albert O, he led the nation in touchdowns by tight end, right? Or was it?
Might have been second at the end.
Second at the end? Okay.
Yeah.
But he's up there.
He is up there.
Yeah. So, and I think it's hard because offensive line-wise, I obviously don't have stats to go off of there. So to really be able to judge it, you almost have to watch them all play. And, you know, that's
right. No, you do.
Take some time.
But. I had to do that, obviously. But I did. So the three, I had 3 Mizzou players on the all SEC team. And I only filled out 1 ballot. So you're only doing the best. So I had Jamon Moore at receiver, who was 2nd in the league in receiving yards and 2nd in the league in receiving touchdowns, I believe. Had a monster season, over 1,000 yards again. Is in the top 10 now all-time at Missouri history in receiving yards. I felt like he was more than deserving. And in fact, like Missouri, if you were to look at – and you're looking at the whole season here, but like Missouri probably had 2 of the 5 best receivers in the SEC this year, and Jamon Moore and Emmanuel Hall. I really felt like if Emmanuel Hall played a whole season, like he was doing things to SEC defenses that few, if any, other SEC receivers were doing.
Right.
I mean, guys, he just – And at the end of the season, he was impossible to cover.
He could almost,
unless you had like 2 guys, like a safety just sitting over the top.
He could almost look at a corner and go, I'm going to run by you right now.
Yeah.
Like, just telling you now.
I'm gonna run by you now because we'll see you later.
Yeah. Right. That was exactly what happened at Arkansas twice in the first half. So, Emmanuel Hall didn't make the cut just because he didn't have the full season production, but Jamon Moore did, in my opinion. Albert O. Even though he didn't play a whole lot in the first few games of the year, had enough by the end. He had 11 touchdown catches.
That's nuts.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Well, and they weren't all freshman. Yeah, and they weren't all the him just being wide open, like fooling the defense. He had some impressive catches.
Yeah, the one against Arkansas was outstanding. Yeah, where he was falling backwards and made that catch. It was that was a big score too, because the game was pretty tight at that point. I think that was a score to put Missouri back ahead after they'd fallen behind Arkansas. So. I think Albert O is probably – I mean, he probably just had the best season of any SEC tight end. There were more – Hayden Hurst from South Carolina had more receptions and more yards, but only 2 touchdowns. Albert O had 11. So I think that on its own merited a spot on the team. And then Drew Locke, other SEC quarterbacks have had more success, but when I was thinking about it this morning, it's like if you were to take – you know, Jalen Hurts, you know, and put him on Missouri's team and put Drew Locke on Alabama. Yeah, exactly. And then you think about Auburn, too. If Auburn were to do that, it'd be probably a little – I don't know. Jarrett Stidham's playing so well, and maybe the heat factor comes into play. But, yeah, I think Drew Locke, if he was placed on any team in the SEC, would make them better instantly.
Okay.
So that's why he got my pick at quarterback. I also filled out – Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, and Newcomer of the Year. Do you have any thoughts on who you would pick for those? Offensive – I guess we could just do, you know, your picks for offensive and defensive. For my Offensive Player of the Year, I did Kerryon Johnson from Auburn. outstanding running back. He's dominated at the end of the year, dominated Alabama, dominated Georgia, dominated Mizzou.
I wouldn't say that.
Four touchdowns. Yeah. He didn't really have that many yards against Mizzou.
They were all red zone touchdowns. Right. If I remember right.
Yeah.
I just remember hearing his name.
Over and over.
Touchdown for Kerryon Johnson.
Yeah, over and over. So he was a stud for Auburn. Defensive player of the year, my pick for that was also another Auburn guy, Jeff Holland, who is our defensive end. He was outstanding and, like, again, really dominant at the end of the year. So I feel like those two were probably the biggest impact players in the conference this year. If you have comments on that, if you're watching or listening, you can yell at me, I guess, and we can embrace debate a little bit. But do you guys have any other thoughts, other people that come to mind? I think there was probably an argument to be made for Drew Locke to be the offensive player of the year.
Yeah, I agree, especially with the way Mizzou came back in the middle of the season or towards the end of the season. But I don't know. It's hard to argue against Kerryon Johnson and what he's done and what he's meant for that team this year.
Yeah.
They're in a position to make the college football playoff.
Exactly. Yeah. So. He's like the best offensive player on a team that's going to the SEC championship game.
Right.
My coach of the year was Kirby Smart at Georgia. Gus Malzahn came up too in my mind. I don't know. He lost twice. So I feel like.
Beat Alabama. That's like you take away a loss.
That's true. I know, but Kirby Smart might beat Auburn.
Yeah, but you take a beat Alabama, it's like winning a national championship.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. Season's over. Exactly. Right? Beat Alabama, it's over.
No, I think that's fair.
Well, just to play devil's advocate, too, I guess against Malzahn being coach of the year, he's done it before. You know what I mean? So this is maybe more of a surprise for Smart,
mm-hmm.
Even though Malzahn probably would be deserving, but... Smart had more of a.
It's not like Georgia's a bad SEC program.
Right, right.
Like,
well,
you make it sound like he turned Georgia around. Like, right. That's a solid program.
True. Yeah, yeah.
You're not wrong.
So, and then Jarrett Stidham was my newcomer of the year.
Completely agree.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good year for him.
Yeah.
Very solid. Yeah. Any other thoughts, gentlemen, on the ballots?
I don't think so. Nope. I think that wraps it up. We've talked about pretty much everything there is to talk about.
We've covered quite a bit in these 40 or so minutes. So. Mm-hmm. Well, you can follow him on Twitter at Daniel_M_Jones. You can follow.
Oh, we got to do our recommendations. I came ready.
Oh,
okay.
Wow, good call. All right, let's do this.
All right. Well, for those of you who are new to our podcast, we do like it's usually during the week. We don't usually do a magic
game. Forgot
to
put that in the script. Yeah.
Yeah. We do like recommendations of the week, and I've got two. I came prepared. One. Was it this morning? Yesterday. I'm a big music fan, so the Grammys announced like their nominees for like different awards. Album of the Year nominees were like a big thing to me. I'm a really big Ed Sheeran fan, and I was like devastated Ed Sheeran wasn't nominated. But I'm like, I was fine with Kendrick and Bruno Mars and Childish Gambino being nominated. So I was like, I listened to Jay-Z's album and I wasn't a fan already. So I didn't know about Lorde. So like I knew her, but I never listened to it. So I went on Spotify,
mm-hmm.
and listen to it. I'm not recommending Lorde's album. I didn't think it was that good.
But, that's where I thought you were going with this.
I don't know how many people do like Apple Music or like Pandora. I think Spotify's better than the rest of them. And that's the only time you'll hear me going against any kind of Apple product.
Oh no, this can't work.
I would have told you that 3 years ago. Spotify is where it's at, man. Yeah, and if you hadn't been blinded by your Apple bias, you would have realized that too.
Right. Okay, well, I'm sitting between this again.
Right.
And then second, I guess all week we were watching, I was watching the Mizzou games at home. A lot of people have like their different cable providers. But like I use Sling,
mm-hmm.
Sling TV, which you can watch on like your computer, TV. Your phone if you want to. Like, it comes, like, you have to pay $5 to ask for a DVR, but, like, I get all the sports channels, DVR, like, news, whatever I need for $25 a month.
It's pretty good.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
It's good enough where my mom canceled her cable at home and just uses my Sling TV account.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, pretty effective.
Yeah, so, like, for people who, like, are like, man, my cable bill is, like, $100. Like, I can't pay this. Consider Sling. I think it's pretty good. And now, the only thing is it's streamed, so, like, you're a little bit behind when games are
on. I have noticed that. Yes, that does happen.
But, I mean, what's being behind 30 seconds? Just don't look at Twitter.
Right. Twitter ruins everything exactly. Anyway.
How can someone not look at Twitter, though? I have trouble. I have to, like, turn the phone over and, trouble. Don't look.
Lock it in the closet or something. Right. And for people who think that our recommendation of the week is a clever way to do advertisements, we're really not getting paid.
No, yeah.
We're not getting paid at all to do
that. I wish I was getting paid by Spotify.
Yeah, if you are interested, if you are interested in sponsoring our podcast,
Spotify,
please, yeah. Please reach out to us. But they
please
are
cancel
really
my payment that has to come in like a few weeks.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I had so when I was going back for Thanksgiving, I did a lot of driving to Kansas City and then to Arkansas and back. So I listened to a lot of stand-up comedy while I was in the car. And I have to say that my recommendation this week is for Jim Gaffigan stand-up comedy.
Oh my gosh, that fantastic. I was literally about to say that because he's good.
He's the man. He's hilarious. He's my good. Family got hooked on him this weekend too. Particularly, he does a bit about bowling, which probably like anybody who's ever gone bowling just recreationally can identify with. It's making fun of like going bowling, even though, I mean, I did that this weekend. Right. Like, I went bowling this weekend, and yet it's very relatable to where if you are passionate about bowling, maybe you shouldn't listen to it.
I thought you were going to bring up Aziz Ansari's because I saw you tweet about Aziz.
Well, that was it. I was listening to him, and then, so you bring that up. What happened was an Arkansas player proposed to his girlfriend
right.
before the game Friday. Aziz Ansari does a little sketch where he's like talking to people about their engagements, and he talks to this couple. The guy got down on one knee and proposed to his girlfriend like before the meal.
Yeah. I remember I've watched
and he goes, isn't that a stupid idea? What if she says no? Yeah. It's like, oh, you want to get some jalapeno poppers? And then when he's talking to she goes, she didn't say anything because she's hungry.
Yeah, exactly.
And the breadsticks are coming out. So, yeah. Anyway, that was because I was listening to a lot of stand-up comedy. Yeah. Recommendation, Nick?
Well, I was not prepared for this.
You've been gone for too long.
I know. True. This is a new trend. I don't know. You can never go wrong. My recommendation would be go to Minnesota for the holiday season.
Oh,
so.
My goodness.
Yeah. Okay.
False. Don't listen to him.
It's cold up there.
You listen to Danny and I's recommendations.
Well, it's okay, cold well, up there. And here
they have burgers. They insert cheese into this weird.
Okay, well, now our podcasts are all like coming full circle. We're like recapping all the debates that we've had. But no, that's all I got. So
okay, cool. Anyways, now we can wrap it up for real.
And so Danny's Twitter again is @Daniel_M_Jones. Cam's is @CJ_Teague, and you can follow me on Twitter @_NickKelly. Gentlemen, we'll see you next week.
Good.
For Cameron Teague Robinson and Daniel Jones, I'm Nick Kelly. Until next time.
Sure and subscribe to Mizzou Sports Podcast at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher.